We're going to take a look at some of the best summer outings in Wisconsin right now with Eric Hansen of Milwaukee, a well-traveled outdoors writer. He's an avid hiker, written extensively. He's the author of Hiking Wisconsin and Hiking Michigan's Upper Peninsula, published by Falcon Globe Pequot Press. Really happy to have him along today. Hey, we're in the middle of summer. It's a great time to be in the outdoors for hiking and walking and traveling around, and I hope you have some questions for him as we move along today. Perhaps you're planning on a trip somewhere and want to know kind of what are some great places in your area that you're visiting, or maybe just have some questions about backpacking or hiking in general. Eric's got the answers for you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. And he joins us by phone. Eric Hansen, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. It's good to be on the show.
Hey, it's a great time of the year, isn't it, for getting out?
It certainly is. You know, and there's just so much to do out there. And I just penciled in a couple themes just of swimming holes, shady walks that are still very appealing in the middle of summer, you know, paddling trips, and also wildlife. And when we talk about wildlife, in Wisconsin, we've got a lot to celebrate. And one of the things is just the return of bald eagles. We've got over 1,000 pairs of bald eagles opting to raise their young in Wisconsin this spring. And one very notable mile mark, if you will, for the first time in I don't know how many years, we've got active eagle nests almost within sight of downtown Milwaukee this spring. Two pairs of bald eagles set up shop, one on the Lake Michigan shoreline near Mequon, another one on Big Muskego Lake just over the line, I think, into Waukesha County to the southwest of downtown. So we just see that Wisconsin's wildlife story continues, and a lot of that is a result of, specifically with eagles, of us moderating our behavior with DDT. Those numbers reflect a tenfold increase from 40 years ago, and it's a good story. Yeah,
and we're not going to see those eagles or any other wildlife unless we get outside and get around and get out there.
Right. I mean, the general story is if you're not looking, you know, the minimum, pull your car over and take a look. And, a week or two ago, we were walking the shoreline up by Doctors Park, right almost at Yosaki County borderline. And it was late, and the light was funny. But I think, and this is very interesting, I saw one of those eagles just by the silhouette, just by the pattern of the wing beat. But because of where the light was, I couldn't get a positive ID on a white tail and a white head. And later I was thinking, you know, whether I could say that as an absolute statement or not, I think I got the benefit because my curiosity was restored.
Yeah.
And the possibility that was just means I'm going to be looking more and thinking that the rewards are greater just for looking to see what's out there, what's moving.
Well, I tell you what, every one of our lines is filled. So,
oh, my gosh. Let's hit them.
Let's hit them. Let's go to Jeremy in Milwaukee first. Hi, Jeremy.
Morning, guys. Hey, I just had a question. I love to go camping, and basically what I'm looking for is, I've been like rafting out on the Wolf River outside of Shawano, and if I was looking for like just the largest expanse of wilderness in Wisconsin, someplace where I could kind of get dropped off in the middle of nowhere and just, you know, wander around or camp or backpack or whatever, where would you suggest or where would that be?
Could you put any other parameters on there than just the largest chunk of wilderness? You're looking for old growth forest. You're looking for wildlife. You'd rather paddle. You'd rather walk.
Rafting would be nice, but I'd rather backpack. Just hike it, you know. Just hike through a good, someplace that's not near roads. You know, obviously.
Let me mention two areas that are just across the one of these funny little lines that people draw onto maps, and that's the line between what they call Wisconsin and what's otherwise called the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I just think it's good to wander across that line because the critters wander across every day and night.
Sure.
But just north of Eagle River, Wisconsin, touching the border, is someplace called the Sylvania Tract, and that's a federal wilderness. There's 16,000 acres of woods that were never cut. There's about 40 spring-fed lakes. The clarity of those lakes is legendary.
Okay.
There's loon chicks on just about every one of those lakes. I just talked to them yesterday. There's an active eagle's nest. The smallmouth bass fishing is legendary. And you're in a landscape that basically is the same as 400 years ago. So it's kind of a time warp to step back. Now, if you're thinking about doing point-to-point backpacking or something like that, there's other venues. And I'm thinking about the North Country Trail west of Mellon, where every once in a while you'll cross a road, but in general you can be walking through forest. Wolves raising their pups nearby. One other venue that's really a regional superlative is the Porcupine Mountains Wilderness State Park in the far western UP, and that's got the largest northern hardwoods virgin forest in the Lake States. 35,000 acres, numerous hiking trails, rivers. I'm not sure if the rafting works because the waterfalls on the Presque Isle are pretty big. I mean, I don't know if you want to drop off them. And the other streams, I'm not sure they're going to be floatable in midsummer. But just, again, that experience that you and I could walk for 25, 30 miles through forest that hasn't changed really in 400 years. And
amazing experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Jeremy.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Dan in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning. My question is, we just moved into Milwaukee. We enjoy camping, hiking, and I was wondering what would you recommend for our first time camping within 2-3 hours drive of Milwaukee that has some nice hiking with it?
And again, I just okay. You're looking for nice camping, and you would like to have some hiking. Is there anything else that you know would tilt you? Would you like a shoreline? Would you like woods?
I'm thinking more woods or wildlife.
Sure.
Shoreline is a bonus.
Okay. I mean, just an hour north of Milwaukee is Mauthe Lake, and that's a campground that's been there for a long time. Boy, I was just there in May. Ice Age Trail runs right by. I mean, there's maybe 10 miles of it runs south through the state forest. Another 20 runs north from Mauthe Lake. Deep Shady Hike starts so just north of Butler Lake and runs up the Parnell Tower. If you walk the Ice Age up to the Parnell Loop and back, it's maybe 10 miles. Almost 100% shade, and I often do that in the summer just to keep out of the sun. Long about this time of year, one of the really cool little things happens is, you know, you'll be in the corner of your eye, you're going to think there's some little pebble moving around down there, and then you kind of look down at your shoes and you realize there's these tiny toads the size of your little fingernail, you know, jumping on the trail. And it's just kind of a reminder that sometimes we can walk by the biggest grin around, and when you actually realize and you get a look at these little toads, it's just a lot of fun. But that part of the Ice Age Trail is a summertime favorite for me. Another favorite, and we're talking car campgrounds here, is Point Beach State Forest. And boy, I just slept there early last week. And 6 miles of state shoreline with a beach you can walk. Wonderful to walk early and late in the day. Just, you know, listen to the rhythm of the surf hitting. Walk it after dark if you wish, especially if the moon's rising over the lake, which is an incredible sight. Herons and Molash Creek at the south end of there. Other things. Other places I can think of are a little bit more of a drive, but those would be the two that I'd start with, you know, and welcome to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Thank you. look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Thanks a lot for calling. And Natalie in Westby is next. Hi, Natalie. Thanks.
Hi, Natalie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a pretty specific question. I am going camping tonight at Interstate State Park in Wisconsin, and I'm wondering about the mayflies. It's kind of close to the river, and I'm wondering if mayflies are going to be an issue.
Boy, Interstate on the St. Croix, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, far northwest, yeah. You know, I don't know for sure, and I guess I would give them a holler up there at the park and ask them and just see what's up. But what I remember about Interstate is the incredible geology, and 10,000 years ago when Lake Superior was covered by a glacier, the meltwater did not go east through the Sault Ste. Marie as it does today. That was basically blocked by debris. The whole mile-thick glacier melted out coming southwest down the Brule, crossing into the Namekagon. Scientists tell us it was one of the largest rivers in the history of our planet, and then flowed down the St. Croix. And over by Interstate, it hit this rock wall, granite, and it cut right through the granite, and it also created the world's largest glacial potholes. And if you can imagine this incredible eddy, and then a round piece of rock the size of an antelope drilling down in that eddy, they drilled through solid granite 20 feet wide and 100 feet deep.
Wow.
Yeah, and you get this picture of this river that, boy, I wouldn't want to go swimming in it, and just incredible power and currents and just all this coming that way. And if you're at Interstate, you can see those, and the largest are actually on the Minnesota side, and that's Interstate State Park as well there. Mm-hmm. And the northwest beginning of the Ice Age Trail is there. And I also remember some fantastic mini climates as you go up and down the rocks. On top of them, it's kind of sunny and dry, and in between, it's like a damp fern garden.
And, oh, great. Well, I'm glad I called. This sounds fantastic.
I'm sorry I can't nail the mayfly question, but I'm sure up there they'll be glad.
You'll probably have a few.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll give them a call.
You'll have a few mosquitoes, but the wildflowers, many of the wildflower varieties are blooming now in the park.
You can see
them along the woodland trails and so forth. So you're going to have some beautiful viewing as you walk.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. We're visiting today with Eric Hansen of Milwaukee, well-traveled outdoor writer and avid hiker, talking about the best summer outings in Wisconsin. And if you have a question about a place you might be visiting or want to visit, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Ron in West Bend is next. Hi, Ron.
Morning, Ron.
Good morning, Eric and Larry. As far as Eric's observation, you know, look for the eagles and all that. I fortunately live close to Cedarburg Bog, and every morning at 6:30 when I let my cat out on a leash, yes, keep him on a leash so he can't go after the birds, I've been hearing the sandhill cranes just phenomenal. It's just an ethereal call. It's great. But my question relates to, Eric, you write about hiking and that on a summer day like today when the humidity and the mosquitoes are so thick you can cut it. How about paddling places like Horicon, which still has water? Milwaukee River is all rocks these days. We haven't had enough rain. Or near Montchez, there's the Oconomowoc River going to Lowe's Lake. What other places like that where you have a mill pond are interesting to see?
Well, I would, first of all, both of those, I would just say, are outstanding if you're in the Milwaukee, Sheboygan area. And let me start with the second one. And Lowy Lake is in Montchez, northwest of Milwaukee, about 45 minutes drive, and it's an incredible paddle. And basically, you paddle up a very long, elongated mill pond. You duck under two farmers' bridges. The river or the mill pond turns from kind of marshy, you know, where you're bound to see herons and stuff, and then becomes this winding route through woods, and then you get to Lowy Lake after about an hour. Lowy Lake is spring-fed. It's this place I always wanted to snorkel. And near the inlets, you can see some of those springs, and it's all DNR-owned. Let me tell you one fantastic tidbit. In the early 90s, a pair of loons nested there, and we always think of loons as up north, and yeah, maybe so, but it's like if they have an undisturbed habitat and a shoreline where they're not exposed to waves or power boats, there's nothing that says they're not going to nest in southern Wisconsin. Lowy Lake to me is just a very wonderful paddle, and it's gotten a little bit more popular as it's gotten known. It's now a part of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And let's swing up to Horicon. I talked to Bill Volkert yesterday, and the big headline at Horicon the last couple of years is the white pelicans are back, or they've showed up. And we've had them in Green Bay for a while. We had them over by La Crosse. And at Horicon, we got about 500 pair nesting. And if you've ever watched white pelicans pivot in flight, you know, it's almost like synchronized swimming. I mean, just this knock-your-socks-off bird, huge, 8-foot wingspan. And so we got 500 pair, you know, on nest there midsummer now. There's, I don't know, maybe another 500 that are not breeding there. They'll be around till maybe later in September, also an eagle's nest there, egrets. And Horicon is just one of these great blank spots in the map, and don't underestimate who else may show up there and surprise us. Bill pointed out something that just fascinated me, and here it is midsummer. It's a warm, muggy day. It's not even August yet. Lo and behold, the fall migration has begun. Bill says the first leased sandpipers are starting to return from the Arctic. So in other words, how many miles north, you know, 1,000, 1,500 miles north, 2,000? The season's already changing, and the very first of the return flight has begun and shown up at Horicon. It just, the connection, to me, I just find just very thought-stimulating.
No.
Ron, was there another part of that?
Well, just do you have any other similar locations? I've been to both of those. Do you have any other spots?
One little paddle just downstream of Mothy Lake where that little exit dam is. There's a very low dam. And this is really a wildlife float kind of thing to float down the Milwaukee River. And it's a little shallow, but I think you'll get through in midsummer for about a mile. And it goes through a state natural area. There's usually an owl. There's usually some wood ducks. And it's just a very quiet, contemplative float. Also, Sheboygan Marsh, particularly the west end. The east end tends to weed up a little bit in midsummer, but Sheboygan Marsh is maybe half the size of Horicon, but just an outstanding place to be.
Ron, thanks very much for calling. We're talking about the best summer outings in Wisconsin today with Eric Hansen of Milwaukee, author of Hiking Wisconsin and Hiking Michigan's Upper Peninsula. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take some more of your calls as we visit with Eric Hansen about great summer places to visit here in Wisconsin. Our number 1-800-642-1234. In Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Steve in Green Bay next. Steve, hello.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Good morning.
Hey, me and my wife, we do extensive backpacking in the UP, and we're just in love with the area up there. We recently found an area called the Sturgeon River Gorge, and we were wondering if you could give us any information on kind of an extended backpacking trip into the gorge.
The guy you want to talk to is Doug Welker. You can reach him through the chapter website of the westernmost chapter of the North Country Trail, and that's www.northcountrytrail.org/P PWF, and the PWF's for Peter Wolf Chapter. Or you could just hit the North Country Trail website and then link through. Doug Welker used to be the wilderness ranger there. He's also very active in conservation causes, and he's active in, you know, building and maintaining the North Country Trail, which in the western UP is just outstanding, like 100 miles of trail you can walk. In general, the interior of the Sturgeon Gorge is there's no trail. There's some pretty old growth. Credible sources say there's a couple virgin stands hidden in there. I would ask Doug about that. He's much more knowledgeable. There's a short trail to the waterfall. There's a campground where the road crosses upstream of the wilderness. As I remember, that campground's infamous for a problem bear if you're over there. Just be careful with your food, you know. It's the kind of thing where it's not whether he's coming, it's what time he's coming for dinner. But it's Sturgeon Gorge is like this great blank spot on the map, you know, and it's just a wonderful venue. I've just poked around the corners of it, and I would just encourage you to talk to Doug because he's been there a lot, and he's
he knows what he's talking about.
I think he's on Isle Royal this week, so you might want to wait a week if you can before you give him a holler. But I can't imagine anybody that would know more about it than him.
Okay.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. One more comment that I had is I'm talking about bald eagles on my way to work, Ashland Avenue in Green Bay. I just happened to see a bald eagle fly over it, and I didn't think that there was eagles that close to Green Bay.
I think there are, both on the shoreline and upstream in the Fox River. I think it's called the Thousand Island section. And the numbers in Wisconsin are awesome. I mean, we are the third largest in the lower 48 population. I just saw a state-by-state breakdown of that, and I think Florida maybe had a 1,150 nesting pair, Minnesota maybe 1,100, and we were at about 1,062. You know, so what's happened is not only up and down all the backwaters of the Mississippi and the Wisconsin River, but a lot of the other places, just every little niche of quiet, relatively quiet shoreline, you know, where they're going to be left alone for a while, they've come in, you know, and they've cruised by and they've said, "Hey, this looks okay. Let's go raise a family."
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
And you mentioned Isle Royal. I think Travis in Little Chute has something about Isle Royal as well. Hi, Travis.
Hello, gentlemen.
Morning.
I'm really enjoying your conversation here. Myself and six of my friends are going to be going up to Isle Royal in about 3 weeks, and we're planning to hike across the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about it and what to look for, what not to miss.
Trev, I got to admit, it's been a few years since I've been on the island. I've got some vivid memories of wolves there. Down on the Malone Bay Trail, boy, it was a humid morning, and I stopped to take a break and realized there was a line of four, maybe five wolves watching me from maybe 150 feet off through the forest.
Cool.
What I remember is they were much more composed than I was. You know, it was like, you know, big, broad foreheads. There was no doubt in my identity that they weren't coyotes. And it was just, it was this ghostly scene. It was like somebody over there, I didn't hear anything, but one of them obviously sent a signal, and they all pivoted in unison and kind of melted back into the shadows, you know. Lots of moves. The island is just, in many ways, it's an icon for our region. I'm often saying that Lake Superior is our Grand Canyon. It's our Grand Teton. It's who we are. You know, it's the superlative of big, pure water. You know, large chunks of its shoreline are wilderness or de facto wilderness and undeveloped. And, of course, Isle Royal's out there in the middle, way over towards the Minnesota-Canadian shore. There's no inhabitants in the winter. It's famous for moose and wolf interaction studies. It's just a very remote place. I mean, in general, people are there in the summertime. Occasionally, the wolf biologists fly in on a ski plane during the snow season or do aerial surveys. I think you're in for a wonderful experience. If you're looking for specific advice and people that have just gotten back or just about to go or go two or three times a year, go to a hiker webpage at www.backpacker.com, and that's Backpacker Magazine's website.
Sure.
Hit on community, then hit on, click on Midwest. You're going to find people like John Hennigan and many others who are just Isle Royale experts and just very willing to share their expertise about exactly which itinerary you may want to do and what you're going to find at different places you're camping at, where the fishing is good, and other things like that. And I'm on that website from time to time, and it's an electronic community. And if you post a question on there, I would guess within about 2 days, you're going to get some very, very well-informed advice right there.
All right.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Sure. Thanks, Travis. Benjamin in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
Hi there, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
All right.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Recently, I was up in the UP in another place that hasn't been talked about, called a place called the Michigami Highlands, or at least that's what the locals call it. And Eric, I walked into the McCormick Tract up there, and it was like I was blown away. It was like walking into an ancient temple.
Mm-hmm. Ancient temple. I like that. Hey.
The place is such a rich history, and I just wanted to know if there was another little gem up there that you could point me to, and just give me a little bit of another background on the area.
Well, let's talk about the McCormick, and there's two aspects I want to mention about that. I mean, one is the McCormick is all 16,000, 17,000, maybe 18,000 acres of very old second growth that hasn't been cut for 90 years, and there's a few virgin white pines in the cliffs where the loggers couldn't get to them. The McCormick family, the Reaper fame, had a lodge there, and it was donated to the Forest Service, so I can't remember how many, 20, 30 years back. I could tell you, I've gone there many times, you know, just to get away from things and just get my head back together when life gets a little bit too frantic, and it's just a wonderful place. All the water in the McCormick Tract, basically most of it flows north, and this is very high plateau, and at the north end of the plateau, it bounces off in these 200-foot cascades in two separate streams called the Falls of the Yellow Dog. So I can't speak highly enough about the McCormick. There's many hidden corners. But the other thing I want to mention is that last year on this program, somebody asked me, Eric, you know, how do you feel about publicizing places, you know? And I said, well, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, for rare botany and stuff, I feel like if you don't publicize a place, there's no fan club when trouble comes.
Yeah.
The McCormick's an incredible example of this. It was kind of a Uper secret. Lo and behold, Kennecott bought up half the mineral rights underneath it and a 500,000 acres up in that area of the UP for a proposed sulfide mine that myself, Michigan ex-Governor Milliken, who's a highly respected moderate Republican, and many, many others are campaigning to stop. Sulfide mining is, when you see pictures of rivers running yellow or orange, that's sulfide mining. It's never been done safely. It's got a long history of water pollution. And but this is a very active issue in western Michigan because not only the McCormick, and they're proposing something 2 or 3 miles away from that Falls of the Yellow Dog, but there are other permit applications pending. Every prospect and company you ever heard of is in the western UP with drill rigs. This is something that's going to impact our whole region. There's an organization that Governor Milken and I, you know, actively engage in called www.savethewildup.org. And I would urge everybody in this region that cares about our sacred northern waters, Lake Superior, and the mineral deposits are in northern Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota, to take a look at that website. And frankly, I play Paul Revere on this issue and just say, wake up, folks. I know we dealt with this in Wisconsin 27-year-long public discussion and civics lesson. That resulted in a moratorium in 1997, and that was a show-me thing. And that simply says, show me a sulfide mine that's been in operation 10 years and closed in 10 years with no problems. We'll be glad to talk to you again. We haven't heard from them.
Yeah. Thanks, Ben, for calling, and good luck on your trip as well. Bill in Richland County, we go to you next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys.
Morning.
20 years ago, I did a lot of hiking in the Porkies, and I knew that park like the back of my hand and all the black flies.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm planning a trip next summer, hopefully, out to Isle Royale, and I'm just wondering, you know, what's the limit of the black fly season?
That's always a good question. I mean, what I notice is long about Memorial Day, they show up, and it depends on the swings of the weather. June is terrible. I'm just saying, it can be terrible. I mean, just awful. And I rarely put a head net on, but I usually have one in my pocket, because if I'm being that badly bugged, if I'm that distracted, I'm going to sprain my ankle or something, you know. So it's kind of like this last line of defense, you know. But in general, I mean, in terms of Isle Royale, I mean, I would say, you know, towards the end of July, all the bugs start to mellow down. You know, as you roll into August, it just steadily gets better. And it's just a steady progression. And, I mean, there's minor strategies besides the head net you can do. You know, if you're at Pictured Rocks or if you're right at the shoreline, a lot of times the shore breeze will keep them inland, but maybe only 100 yards or something like that. So seasonally, I would be cautious about June. You know, and if there's somebody listening who's got a specific experience, you know, on the island, hopefully they'll call in or clarify that. And we had a call just one or two before in which I was suggesting that the caller check with folks that hang out at a hiker webpage, and that's at www.backpacker.com. Click on community, then click on Midwest, because there's a bunch of Isle Royale people or people that are there one or two times a year that hang out there and will be happy to give you expert advice. And they may have just gotten back from the island just now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good luck, Bill. Thank you. And Edie in Pelican Lake, hello to you.
Morning. Good morning. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this question, but whenever I hear a program of this sort, I always wonder why we can't get the pelicans to come back to Pelican Lake. They're in Green Bay, and I believe Horicon Marsh.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what could one do? Is there anything?
Remind me where Pelican Lake is again.
It's near Rhinelander.
Okay.
North of Antigo.
Mm-hmm. And historically, presumably, they were there, and that's why the name's there? Or?
Well, we always thought it was misnamed until the pelicans started coming back to Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And I believe in the 1880s, they were really prolific. And this is quite a large-sized lake.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we think it was named for the white pelican.
Mm-hmm.
And I had hoped that they would find us again, but they haven't.
Boy, you know, I think that's a question for the bird specialist, but it just, I don't know. I don't think any of these reappearances were enticed, you know, so to speak. Restocking effort. For some reason, they just noticed desirable habitat. And, you know, in a way, that's the fascinating thing, whether we're talking about wolves or whether we're talking about eagles or, you know, nesting loons or pelicans, is we're not dialing up a programmed show. You know, it's ebbing and flowing, and what we saw last year may not be a done deal for tomorrow, and the habits change, and who knows, you know, maybe what they're eating turns out to be a little bit more enticing in one area or another. But Well, I would just say that the signs are upward. The trend is upward. I mean, obviously, they're flying by. You know, whether they choose to set up shop is a whole nother question. But it's kind of like the possibility is there. And I think it's wonderful that those possibilities seem to be multiplying.
Yeah, we're thrilled that they're back, and we just wish they would come here.
Yeah, I can understand that completely. Yeah.
Thanks, Edie.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Mary and Juno, we'll go to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to, at first I wasn't going to call at all, and I thought, well, maybe they would just appreciate knowing that they're being listened to. And you began talking about the park, and it's called Interstate Park now in the Taylor's Falls, St. Croix area. And my grandfather came in the late 1800s from New York, and he settled in Taylor's Falls, and he was a nature man, and he also was a dentist. But he had the wisdom that that needed to become a safety area, and he created the park. He was that park together, and it wasn't called Interstate then. We just called it the park in Taylor's Falls. So then, and my mother was raised there, so I remember playing in that area when it was just becoming a park, and all of the deep kettles, and knowing the river when the boats were still pretty new, and my mother and dad both knew the stories of all the logs coming down the river on the St. Croix. So just wanted to share that, and then the next call was about the pelicans, and I live on a farm on Lake Sinisippi, and the pelicans arrived about 5 years ago. So I see them all the time, every day, and we're just an extension of the Horicon Marsh. But then the other part of that is when we bought this farm, we restored it to its natural habitat. The farmer would talk about in the 40s, in the 30s and 40s, the eagles were here, and they returned 7 years ago, and they nest on this farm. So just thought I'd let you know that there's people listening and there's a connection as you share and talk.
Well, thank you for your good work, too.
Thank you very much for calling. I believe Interstate isn't that our oldest state park?
I don't know that for a fact, but it rings a bell. I've got a faint memory of that, and I don't want to make an absolute statement without researching.
Okay, Nick in Green Bay, hi to you.
Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
My wife moved me to Michigan about 10 years ago. And I had a friend up there, he's a wildlife biologist, and he took me to the Tashiti Grade.
The Tashiti Grade, okay, a legendary road,
And it's awesome in there, but I would like to explore it on my own, but I'm kind of scared to go in there, because if you drive in there, you can go for miles and not see anything or anybody, and is there any way of getting maps to that place or anything? Because he's like, well, let's hop out here, and I was like, for what? There's nothing here. And we walked about a mile, and there's a huge waterfall, like a 60-foot waterfall.
Tashiki.
Yeah.
And do you know which fall that was?
Not a clue. He took me to places where they dropped the moose, and I don't know where he took me.
Right. Well, the Tashiki Grade is this magical road. It's a bit of a legend. It was built as a railroad right-of-way. And as I remember, the railroad never got going. I think somewhere up the grade was too steep or something. And it starts out pavement coming up from Lake Michigami and turns to gravel and then gets more and more like dispersed with a two track going this way and that way. It touches the south end of the McCormick Tract. And for me here in Milwaukee, I can drive to the south end of the McCormick in 5 hours. For me to go to the north end where that caller Ben was talking about, I got to go all the way around, you know, past Big Bay. But a lot of those roads, part of the culture or tradition up there are not marked. I mean, people say things to you like, look for the blue blaze on the white pine, you know.
Yeah.
And part of visiting these places is kind of flagging down an oncoming pickup truck. And I got to tell you, sometimes the stories that and the storytelling that emerges from that, you know, it's like you got a two-hour delay before you get started again and go to the waterfall. But this is the back of beyond. I think we got 600,000 acres up there without utilities. This is the Yellow Dog Plains are there. You know, far up on the coast, there's the Huron Mountain Club. Exploring up there, you know, driving these dirt roads and things is just a fantastic thing. And, you know, yes, there's maps, and I think the county can give you maps. It's also a kind of place where you really want a compass. And if you're going far enough, you know, maybe you want a GPS. But my other advice is to have water and a sleeping bag in your vehicle.
Yeah.
Like, if you're following this maze of unmarked dirt roads and you enjoy doing this, don't presume you're going to be out by dark and prepare to sleep over. You know, make sure your gas tank is topped off. And, I mean, normal cautions, I mean, are pretty obvious, but mm-hmm. just, like, why not be prepared to stay the night if you find something you want?
And with that, we have to conclude. Eric, it's always a pleasure. Thank you,
Larry. Yeah, let's do this again.
Yeah, we definitely will. Eric Hansen of Milwaukee, well-traveled outdoor writer, avid hiker. He's written extensively for Backpacker Magazine and other outdoor journals, and is the author of Hiking Wisconsin and of Hiking Michigan's Upper Peninsula, published by Falcon Globe Pequot Press. And he's a great guy, and obviously, as you've heard, knows a whole lot about Wisconsin and the UP is in particular as well. And I always enjoy talking with him. He's got so much enthusiasm for the out-of-doors. It's always a lot of fun. Well, you know what else goes in the out-of-doors? That's barbecuing. And we're going to be talking about Bastes barbecue sauces, mops, and marinades made with craft beer. Our guest coming up next, Lucy Saunders of Shorewood, Wisconsin. Her new book out is called Grilling with Beer. Next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.